Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
It's about 40 degrees already. And the winds are going to be 40 miles an hour today. Mother Nature is drunk and angry. And then it'll turn into winter again. You know, we're in that weird phase that everybody walks around and goes, why do I live here? Between now and March. We can live here because it's the best city in the world. But it sucks this time of year.
It does.
Between now and March.
But it keeps you on
weird
your toes.
Weather.
You never know what it's going to do.
I wouldn't be on your toes today. If you're on your toes today, you could get blown three or four blocks.
Oh, come on. It's fun.
So, good times. By the way, speaking of good times, I had a better afternoon than any of you.
Oh, you saw Abby G.
Abigail Grace and I hung out yesterday for, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours.
How was it?
Fantastic.
And she loved you.
Came right to me.
She slept for 4 hours.
No, she did sleep for like an hour and a half because I wore her out.
That's awesome. Yeah. What'd you guys do?
We did all the things you would expect to do. We played Hide the Puzzle Pieces.
Oh, right, so much fun.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, Hide the
game.
Puzzle Pieces. A good game. And she's got kind of a David. You know, people put puzzles together. She takes them apart.
Yeah.
It's a very forward-thinking view of puzzles. It's very David Copperfield-esque, where she'll take a piece, hide it.
Yeah.
And then she shrugs her shoulders like, I can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's gone.
It's kind of advanced.
It's very advanced.
Yeah.
We played in her tent.
Oh.
Yeah, Amy Cochran got her a toy tent, and that's a good time. Now, my head can fit in the tent.
How big is that tent?
I put my head in the tent. That's pretty much it. It's her body and my head in the tent.
Surprised you're still not stuck in it.
Yeah, there was some of that going on. She's got this lion that she walks behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's very close to walking, and she sticks her little butt out, and she patrols the hallway. The hallway's never been safer.
Yeah.
Because she goes down the hallway, and then we turn her around, and she comes back, and then she goes down the hallway and comes back. She did 30 miles yesterday. 30 miles just back and forth in the hallway, which is a lot for a one-year-old.
Does she have a baby Fitbit?
No, but she loves mine.
Oh.
Yeah, it's colorful, so she kept turning it on like it was the first time she'd ever seen it. It was quite fascinating. So it was a fantastic day. I love that kid so much.
It's so much fun, isn't it? To just play and
it's just really amazing.
Young again.
You look at her sometimes and you go, you don't do anything. Why am I so fascinated with you? She's the greatest thing in the world. She's just the best. And we had a blast. Just a total blast. So I wish that for you, David.
Thank you.
At some point. We're going to get Steve and his wife on this. I could show them diagrams, possibly some films.
Oh, no. I think they can take their own sweet time.
You've been heavy on the coaxing with Dave Ennett this week.
Well, Mary is on board. Mary's on board. I'm on board.
My daughter-in-law looks so cute in her little baby bump.
Yeah.
So fun. So,
I'm sure she's loving that.
Yeah.
But I'm psyched for you, Mary, because it's very cool.
I know. I can't very wait. Cool. I just stop myself at the stores from buying things. I just want to buy something, and I don't even know the sex of the baby, so I just have to stand back.
And you know what the best is? And I don't remember my kids being like this. They must have been, but she wakes up from a nap, and you go in to get her, and she sees you, and she smiles like you're the greatest person on the planet.
Oh, see.
She looks at you like, I don't want anybody else here. It's you and me, dude. It's just you and me. It's so great.
But you get that every morning. Dave and I look at you like that all the time.
Not even close.
Not really.
Not really. No. Not even close.
And we don't need to be changed.
And then we yawn. Yeah.
We're potty trained.
Sometimes, Dave. No.
I think the whole diaper thing is a fraud, too. I think she can do it herself. She just, why would she? She doesn't have to.
Of course.
That kid will probably be potty trained really quick.
She's
I bet
the best. Just the best. Greatest ever. I mean, I'm sure all the other grandkids listening now and the grandparents, I'm sure your grandkids are adequate. There's Abigail Grace and all the rest.
She's a cute kid.
All right, coming up on the show today, Senator Durbin later. Got a lot to talk about. Obviously, the president does his farewell address tonight. I'm going to go through, by the way, the timeline of his 8 years with the highlights. And let's do a quick grade, quick grade of the presidency.
Okay.
Dean's on, of course, today. Coach Q will be on today. You got a Hawkopedia in the old chamber?
We will.
Okay, yeah. Still deciding on which one it is?
I have a couple of things I'm working on.
Okay. Senate nominations begin. Controversial Attorney General selection. Jeff Sessions will win his way into the AG position, but not without a fight. And more on the shooting in Fort Lauderdale from an expert on the same later on as well. That's some of the stuff coming up.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GM's Cochrane Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
620, hi Nick.
Hey, what's up?
When's your next movie?
Tonight.
And what is it?
It's Children of Men.
What is that again? Children of Men? What are we talking about there?
Children of Men is Clive Owen, Julianne Moore, Michael Caine.
Oh, yeah. It's a really good movie.
Yeah. It takes place in the future. Only, you know, now when the movie first came out 10 years ago, it took place 20 years in the future. Now it takes place 10 years. It takes place in 2027, and I got to tell you.
And there's only one baby born. Is that the deal?
Well, there hasn't been a baby born in 18 years.
And it turns out it's a Trump?
And it, there's a girl who's pregnant, and these rebels want to get her out of the country. It takes place in Britain. Get her out of the country where they have problems with immigrants.
Mm.
I watched the movie. I hadn't seen it in a couple of years. It's one of my favorite movies. Came out in 2006. It was number one on my list in 2006. And on my list of the best movies of the aughts, it came in second under 25th Hour as the best movie in that decade. I busted it out, you know, like last week just to get myself reacquainted with it for tonight, preparing to, you know, to talk about it afterwards. And it's kind of terrifying how prescient this movie is. As I was watching it, I'm like, oh my God, this movie takes place only 10 years from now. And I'm watching it and I'm thinking, yeah, this was sort of massive sci-fi in 2006. And now it's like, yeah, it's like, you know how Idiocracy became a documentary last year?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Children of Men is on the verge of being that. And then I got a feeling that in 2017, we'll be thinking about Children of Men. In 2018, we're going to go straight to Mad Max.
Yeah. How about House of Cards becoming a comedy? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how do we get tickets?
All right. You can go to Fandango.com or you can go to Carmike.com, Carmike. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. It's at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. The movie starts at 8. Stop in early at Bogart's. Have some great dinner at 7. I'll introduce the movie. We'll talk about it afterwards. It really is a truly amazing movie. And Alfonso Cuarón directed it, who most people remember directed Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban and Gravity with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. And some of the techniques that he uses in Children of Men were groundbreaking. And he does, at one point in the movie, there is an 11-minute single take that took 12 days to shoot.
Wow.
And it's really complicated with explosions and gunfights and shootouts. And the action in the movie is breathtaking. The performances are great.
Hey, what happened to Clive Owen, by the way? Where is he?
He's got a show called The Nick on Cinemax.
Okay.
That he's been doing. Steven Soderbergh created it. And, you know, he's been in and out of movies here and there. I always thought that Clive Owen's career should have taken off a lot bigger than it did.
Yeah. He's a great actor.
But he had a good year that year, because in 2006 he was in Children of Men. And he was also in, I know, a movie that you love. He was in Spike Lee's Inside Man.
Such a good movie.
Year.
Such a good
great movie. So this is a great one. And then you can go to Carmike.com or Fandango.com. Pick out your seats. They'll be waiting for you tonight. I really highly recommend it. If you can see this movie on the big screen, this is really one of my favorite movies of the 2000s, without question.
You obviously saw the Globes, and
I did, yes.
The controversy continues, though I think we could probably put it to bed because both sides aren't going to agree on this. I would just add what I said before, and that is the fact that if you're a celebrity, you're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to express your opinion on the platform that you have. That's how millions and millions and millions of dollars in charitable funds are raised constantly. You're also entitled to your opinion politically. You're also entitled not to listen to it if you don't like. But to simply tell people, yeah, just stick to your cute little movie business, that's ridiculous.
I agree.
And people need to, stop dismissing people because, frankly, what Meryl Streep said was completely relevant, entirely truthful, and all good. Now, here's where you run into a problem. When you honor Roman Polanski who is stands 40 years later accused of raping a 13-year-old, right. You lose credibility. And the same people who were roaring for Meryl Streep for all the right reasons need to treat Roman Polanski with the disdain that he deserves. He doesn't, you know, being a great artist doesn't mean you're a great human being, and doesn't mean that you want to have a party for him. Fine. But you want to have a public award ceremony and stand up and applaud him? I find that outrageous.
Yeah. That's interesting how when this kind of stuff enters the realm of you know, the award shows and things like that. Now, personally, I don't necessarily think that her speech Sunday night was any kind of sort of liberal, you know, nonsense. I also
it was
don't
a
think
human
she
speech.
Exactly. She didn't slam conservatism.
Nope.
She didn't even mention Trump's name.
No. Nope.
She talked about how we need to be nicer to one another, how if you're in a position of power, you should not bully those who are weaker than you,
right.
And that we should all stand together, and that the press should do their job. That's what she said.
Right.
To have it blown out of proportion is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And I thought it was one of the highlights of the show. I really did.
Yeah, so did I. In what otherwise was a pretty weak show.
Oh, terrible show. And Jimmy Fallon was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that opening, what was that opening monologue? And I know, you know, everybody would probably say, well, his teleprompter didn't work. Besides the teleprompter, the material was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And to miss the Mariah Carey tap in, you know, until the writers backstage told him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just a disappointing show. And having said that, the ratings went up 8%. I was surprised.
Yeah, I know. I guess people want nice Academy or nice awards instead of like Ricky Gervais ripping on people, which I prefer. But I got to say this, though, and I know you've probably talked about this already, Steve, but Steve Carell and Kristen Wiig.
Tremendous. Yeah, tremendous.
Come on.
Tremendous.
Brilliant. And Steve, how dedicated were they to that
thing? Oh, yeah. Sold it 1,000%.
I think we found next year's hosts.
They would be great. They held for laughs for so long. They were totally dedicated to the sadness of the bit.
Right.
It was brilliant. It was the highlight of the night, besides Meryl Streep's speech, the highlight of the night.
Yeah, because if you can take my mom's and dad divorcing and and three dead dogs and make it funny, you're funny people.
Absolutely. and so that was the highlight for me as far as like presenters go. As far as speeches go, I thought Ryan Gosling gave a really wonderful speech, really sincere and nice. And
by the way, here's another reason the internet sucks. I actually saw a takedown of or attempted takedown of Ryan Gosling yesterday, saying his speech was sexist.
What?
Sexist?
Why? Because he called Eva Mendes my girl?
No, because his wife was home and gave him an opportunity to do the movie. Let me tell you something. Get out of the house. You know, get a date. Get a life and lighten up, Francis. It was a beautiful speech. It was a beautiful speech about a guy who loves his wife, who is sharing a family tragedy and some very intimate details. And I thought it was touching.
Very.
I did, too. I thought it was great. That's ridiculous. As far as, like, winners go, I am so thrilled that Atlanta won Best Comedy and that Donald Glover won.
You were on that show forever.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you love it.
Yeah. I love that show. And to get the kind of recognition it got that night. I hope a lot more people see it, because I got a feeling that Sunday night when people were watching the awards, and when Donald Glover got up there, I would say that 80% of the people watching are like, who's that and what is Atlanta?
Yeah. Well, to take a full circle, I think that was the problem with Jimmy Fallon's opening, because, you know, you watch more TV than any human, but I think the vast majority of people who watched that didn't know 90% of the people in that montage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I agree. And it was, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm thrilled that La La Land won every award that it could possibly win. We unveiled my top 10 list on Monday morning, and La La Land is at the top of the list. And I hope it goes on to sweep everything at the Oscars.
My musical, Trump, which is a love story between Vlad and Donald, is coming out soon as well.
Yeah. And that's a based on a true story.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know that thing where they walk up the clouds? It's Trump. It's Trump and Donald, but they're like Russian, sort of goose stepping, to be honest with you. So, see you on the radio.
I think that's got hit written all over it.
No, no question about it.
Yeah.
Back on the air tonight at 2, right after your movie.
Right after the movie, yeah. I'm on at 2 a.m. And we're going to talk about Chicago Theater Week, where you can see a bunch of really great plays in the city for like half price or really cheap. And that'll be after my screening of Children of Men, and I hope people can make it out tonight.
Fandango or Carmike. All right, buddy, thanks. And back after this with a big story on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
I want to thank our friends at Ray and Raymond Chevrolet, Kid of the Week sponsors for the last couple of years. And ChevyDriveChicago.com, always chipping in as well. We're kicking off a new year of Kid of the Week, and we want you to make sure you tell us about great kids doing great things. Get those Kid of the Week submissions in. We may change the methodology here, but for now, go through the website at WGNradio.com and tell us about a great kid doing anything. Now, this could be something as simple as a kid getting over a tough spot in their life. Maybe they've been getting C's, and now they're getting B's. Could be something bigger than that. We get a lot of charitable submissions where kids are doing great charitable things, which is good. We get still, and over the course of the 15, 16 years I've been doing this on GN, we've had probably 24 stories of kids saving lives. So they could be big things, they could be small things. But it's just good news stories about kids, because we got a lot of bad news stories about kids. And it doesn't even have to be a kid you know. If it's don't assume we see and hear everything. If you see a story online or you hear about a great kid doing something, even if it's not in Chicago or in the Midwest, let us know about that.
And brag, too. I love, we get so many emails with people saying, well, I don't want to brag, but brag.
Brag. Yeah. Brag it up. Brag it up real good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you say we may change the methodology here, are you referring to the selection process?
For the Kid of the Year?
Yes. Dave, I had the same question.
No, I think you two have done a fine job, and frankly, Andre and I want no part of that final decision.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Because we don't want to break all the other kids' hearts.
No, we want you two to be the bad guys.
We're okay. We don't mind doing that.
Yeah. All right, so get those Kid of the Week submissions in, and again, through the website. Or you could also, I'll give out Mary Sandberg, Boyle, Frusenglage, Farfik, Nugent, Comcast Sportsnet's cell phone, and you can just call her and tell her, too, if you want.
I'm sure she'd love that.
Yeah. Starts with a 3.
Oh.
We'll give out all the digits at various times during the show, and you can put them together. It'll be like a little game show. Bad transition here, but one thing that was driving me crazy yesterday, and I just want to bring this up again, and I don't know if you guys share this with me, but I am nauseatingly sick of the news networks continuing to refer to the Rust Belt, the Heartland, Middle America, the Midwest in a pat on the head sort of way, in that that's where all the Trump people are. And isn't it cute?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the truth. Trump won because he got votes all over the country. He got votes in New York. He got votes in California. He got votes in Florida. He got votes in Seattle, Washington. And yeah, he got votes in Illinois and Wisconsin and Michigan. In case you missed it, Pennsylvania is still on the East Coast, and that was one of the keys to his victory, as was North Carolina and Florida. So while I don't subscribe to this notion that the media is the enemy, and the media is, what does Trump say, dishonest?
Dishonest.
The media is coastally biased and frickin' clueless at times. This is not just about Chicago being a world city. This is about every small town, big town, medium town, all over. You can go to the most Republican parts of Southern Illinois, and you'll find plenty of Hillary Clinton voters. You know why? Because there's people all over the country who subscribe to different views. It's what makes America great. So this clustering that you hear on CNN and MSNBC and Fox all the time about the heartland and the Midwest and the waving fields of wheat. Shut the hell up.
Especially now, there's no waving fields of wheat.
Well, it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's January. No.
Stop acting like we're the quaint cousins that you have to see at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's all one big America, and you're just as screwed up as everybody else, and we're just as good as everybody else. That's why I hate the phrase second city. I've always hated second city.
Oh, I hate that too.
You know, why would we take a backseat to anybody?
No, I know. But I feel the same way when they refer to Chicago as, oh, the violence capital of the nation and Chirac. No, you know, come on.
I talked to a friend of mine yesterday who will get back on the show at some point, who is a hero, American hero, and one of the top security experts in the country, who has lived in North Carolina mostly. But he's in and out of the Middle East. But he's lived in North Carolina mostly for the past, I don't know, 10 years. But he was here for 20 years. And he's been traveling back and forth to Iraq regularly. And he throws a crack in his email. He goes, it's safer in Chicago.
Come on.
You know, and this is a guy that knows that's not true. Yeah. But I'm saying that is what you just said. It's become the national image.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous.
Okay. Live from the cute heartland. This is 720 WGN and the Steve Cochran Show at 646.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All of these little procedural complaints are related to their frustration at having not only lost the White House, but having lost the Senate. I understand that, but we need to sort of grow up here and get past that. We need to have the president's national security team in place on day one, and papers are still coming in, and so I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get up to 7 nominees on day one, just like we did 8 years ago.
You know, with all due respect, and you know what a fan of Mitch McConnell I am, what an ass clown.
What a great word.
It's unbelievable. I mean, the hypocrisy is unbelievable. There is no reason to not have the ethics investigation, the backgrounders on every one of these candidates done before the hearings. None. And yes, they can be held up. They don't have to go through the express line, you boob. All right, now let's bring in the journalist after I shoot my mouth off. Stephanie Ramos is here from ABC. Good morning.
Good morning.
He's an ass clown. All right, I got it out of my system now. All right, so what happens today? Who's first?
So today, it's a busy day. It's a busy week here on Capitol Hill.
Sure.
First up is Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions. He is nominated for Attorney General. So he will be in the hot seat this morning at 9:30 Eastern Time. And as Attorney General, you know, it's listed that he's supposed to ensure equal justice under the law for all Americans and keep politics out of our justice system. And that's what a lot of Democrats will question him about. We'll try to make sure that he can actually do. But Sessions is no stranger to confirmation hearings or the Senate Judiciary Committee. Back in 1986, Sessions was nominated by then President Ronald Reagan for a federal judgeship and failed to get confirmed by the Senate following testimony that he had made racist comments. So that is bound to come up this morning. Sitting Senator New Jersey Senator Cory Booker will actually testify against Sessions, which is an unprecedented move. That's never seen that before. But Democrats, they've expressed a lot of frustration that several of these candidates have not yet disclosed all their financial documents, what you were referring to just a few minutes ago. These documents are necessary for a full vetting and a sign off from the Office of Governmental Ethics. So that's been a big issue the last week or so. Where even yesterday at the White House press briefing, White House spokesperson Josh Earnest was talking about how the Obama administration had all their ducks in order,
right,
and was organized and had all their had all of the relevant vetting documents ready to present to the committees of jurisdiction on or shortly after Election Day.
Yeah, so, and Chuck Schumer read back a letter that came from McConnell, which basically said, "I'm not going to do what I said you should do." You know, it's just the hypocrisy is unbelievable. Now, here's the thing. Condoleezza Rice stepped up yesterday and said, look, I'm from Alabama. We grew up in the same era. It was a racist era. I'm here to tell you Jeff Sessions is not a racist, and I'm endorsing him. That's a big deal, but it goes directly against the Cory Booker thing that you mentioned. But, I mean, am I wrong about this? They have the votes, right? He will get through.
Maybe. Most likely. It's unclear, but, I mean, it may take a couple of days to wrap up. I mean, none of these nominees, may not be confirmed until after the president is sworn in on January 20th, but these hearings can go on for a couple of days.
Okay. Say hi to Stephanie.
Stephanie, Audrey. Good morning. Two quick questions for you. First of all, when you talk about the background checks and what they have to go through and what they have to release, they can't say no to any of that, right? I mean, basically, this is...
The Trump tax returns?
Exactly. I mean, they have to disclose all of that. Okay.
Yes. Before a nomination may move to the Hill, the candidate, they have to submit several forms and go... undergo a fair amount of vetting by the White House, the FBI. And what's gathered in this process are financial disclosure reports, criminal checks, questionnaires, any ties to foreign governments, things like that. That all has to be checked out.
And who aside from Sessions do you think will be the nominee facing the most pushback?
This may be it. This may, aside from Sessions, it looks as though it may be pretty smooth for the other cabinet picks. I think
I keep hearing Stephen Mnuchin, yeah. You know, the financial stuff and the foreclosures. Right. Are you hearing that?
On and off. I mean, I think this Sessions hearing this morning will get contentious. You know, he's got a lot to prove to folks that are still kind of under the impression of of what they heard back in the 80s. Sessions he'll try to lay out his case before Senate colleagues over why he should be confirmed. And we got the prepared remarks yesterday, and in those remarks, he's expected to talk about how he vows to tell incoming President Trump no when necessary. He'll defend police and law enforcement officers across the country. So he's got a lot to prove, I guess, to the folks he'll be talking to this morning. So it may get pretty contentious.
I bet Tillerson will get a little bit of blowback as
They'll definitely have some questions about the Putin stuff.
And Iran.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Stephanie, I'm putting together, I don't know if you saw La La Land, I'm putting together a musical, Trump, but with Trump and Putin. It's a love story.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'll put you on the comp list.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the help. Appreciate it. Nice job
no
at ABC.
Problem.
See you later.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
That's Stephanie Ramos from ABC Radio. All right, 6:57, Senator Durbin next hour. And we're going to go through a timeline of President Obama's presidency ahead of his speech tonight, which you're going to be at.
Yes, I will be there pretty early. I think I should be there probably about 4 or 5 o'clock. Media has to get there. Doors open to the public.
Will you be greeting fans?
Yeah.
It's okay if you see
Andrea. My fans are President Obama's fans.
Fans of us. Yeah, yeah. Fans of us, fans of you.
Of course, fans of the show.
Yeah. Please go up to Andrea. She loves a hug from a listener.
Love a hug.
And a viewer from Channel 9. 6:58, back after this. News next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The bubble's the bubble. I think we've done a pretty good job staying in touch with the American people, but at a certain point, you can't help but lose some feel for what's on the ground because you're not on the ground.
And you didn't think Donald Trump could win.
Case in point. So that tells me that there's a utility in the democracy refreshing itself on an ongoing basis. You can argue that we didn't get everything done that we wanted to get done, but I can make a really strong argument and I think prove that by almost every measure, the country's better off now than when I started.
Yeah, maybe. Let's go through it. We got to do this fairly quickly. Senator Durbin will join us in a few minutes. November 5th, 2008, Barack Obama's elected. And I was filled with optimism. I think most of us were. Shortly after that, Mitch McConnell and others stepped up and pledged to block him. He also did nothing to work with Congress to try to break that blockade down. He was above it, and he made a huge mistake in doing it. January of 2009 promised to close Guantanamo. Never happened. February of 2009 signed a stimulus bill. Remember, the economy was collapsing when he came in.
Yep.
I refused to sign off on the notion that that was George Bush's fault any more than it's Barack Obama's fault. But Obama has to give credit for saving the Wall Street economy, which is roaring now.
Absolutely. Remember, interest rates were so low. Remember, they had the homeowner tax credit for the first-time home buyer.
Yeah.
Banks, which was a big chunk.
Banks were standing out in front of the banks going, who needs money?
Exactly.
We can't lend you any, but we're just handing it out now. Afghanistan surge in violence created a push to end Afghanistan and Iraq by a certain date. Laying out the dates when troops were being removed, not a good call. July of 2009, the president held his beer summit. His beer summit was when there was a racial act that looks fairly tame now between a Harvard professor and a black Harvard professor and a white cop in Boston. The beer summit was something that was cute at the time, but President Obama widely missed the opportunity to have a better handle on the racial divide between cops and the black community in particular but also the violence right here in his hometown.
Yeah, and how it's escalated since then.
October of 2009, the Hate Crimes Prevention Act was signed. You can argue about whether or not hate crimes is a legitimate reason to kick up a criminal's charges, but it serves its purpose well, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. Obamacare passed in March of 2010. We go over this a million times. The four or five core elements of Obamacare are great. They need to be saved. The bill itself was a weighty pain in the butt and remains the same. It really was a situation where if Medicaid had been expanded, you could have done it that way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. So now you got to go back and fix it. The Republicans don't appear to have any idea. He deserves credit for getting health care for everyone, but the bill's a mess.
Right. You can't blow it up. You can't say, you know what, we are tossing it, going back to ground zero. You just can't do it.
Absolutely not. November of 2009, The Guardian publishes 250,000 American diplomatic cables. This is all part of the beginnings of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is a criminal enterprise, should never be held up as a source. But the Snowden story, Snowden is a bad guy. He's always been a bad guy. He put American personnel in the field at risk. And the NSA tapping into Americans' live was overblown and never understood by people. Once again, the core of that program was simply an ability to go back and look at your phone records or mine if for some reason you or I were criminally tied to a terrorist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They weren't listening to every phone call. They weren't reading every text message. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't understood.
No, and many feel that Snowden is a traitor.
Absolutely. December of 2010, the Arab Spring, when we thought things were turning in the Middle East. I think we can give up the idea that cultures and societies that are thousands of years older than ours can't wait for democracy. Let's stop shoving democracy down people's throats that don't want it. 2011, March, Libya, Gaddafi gone. President Obama has taken credit for this one, saying one of his biggest mistakes was not supporting Libya after Gaddafi's death. April of 2011, someone named Donald Trump began his birth certificate dance. May of 2011, Bin Laden killed. Maybe the absolute defensive highlight, because there's no way to argue that President Obama didn't end Al-Qaeda as we knew it. Mm-hmm. We don't even talk about Al-Qaeda anymore. February of 2012, Trayvon Martin shooting. And again, this is more of the racial divide getting out of hand. May of 2012, the first sitting U.S. president to back gay and lesbian rights to marry. Welcome to the 21st century. It's about time. November, he's reelected. December, he had Sandy Hook in right. Newtown. To me, along with 9/11, the worst day of our adult lives.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we've been able to do nothing with guns in this country, and more specifically with mental health, goes directly to Fort Lauderdale last Friday. It's just an absolute outrage. One of the worst moments of the Obama presidency, March of 13, with a Syria red line comment that it couldn't be crossed. Syria became one of the, and history will remember Syria, as an absolute outrage that the Western world looked away while men, women, and children were slaughtered in the streets. And this is why we're not in a position to be friends with Vladimir Putin. It was his country that paid for it. Climate change, June of 13, continues to be a hot button. I don't know that that's anything more than a push. 2014, the Moscow relationship gets worse. I actually give Obama credit for calling out Putin for the disaster that he is. November of 15. The executive order thing cranks up even more, and the executive orders go through 15 into 16 because Congress wouldn't work with Obama. Yeah, the bottom line is this. If you break it down, you can break it down in a number of different ways. But if you break it down, foreign policy, I think, is a win in certain areas. But the Middle East, you can't give them a win.
No,
the Middle East is a mess, and the quarterback gets too much credit and too much blame, and he takes the blame for this. Domestically, I think he's changed things in a lot of ways for the positive. I think he missed an opportunity to try to help stem the violence here, but it doesn't mean he can't do it in a post-presidential way the way Jimmy Carter has.
Yeah, too. And also, to your points as well, the last year he has faced just almost unprecedented opposition,
yeah,
too.
No doubt.
So if people are saying nothing got done, well, that's for a major reason.
I'm going to give him a B-.
Overall?
B-, early grade, B-.
Early, all right.
Yeah, early grade's a B-.
You want to hear the farewell speech and then change the grade tomorrow?
Well, we'll see.
For better or for
worse? I don't know if there's a curve or not.
Okay.
It's 7:19. Is Senator standing by? Let's go to Senator Durbin now, is standing by. Are you in? He's not standing by. All right, we're taking a break? What are we doing? All right, we'll do traffic, and then we'll come back with Senator Durbin next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Amongst the jobs of the Senate is to confirm nominees from a new president for cabinet positions. It's a very important part of the work of the Senate. An important piece of that is for the Senate committee to have the full package of information on each candidate so they can formulate their questions, ask the questions they need to ask, and then vote appropriately. Senator Durbin joins us now. You know, with all due respect, Senator, I'd like to choke Mitch McConnell, and I don't mean that in a threatening way. It's just this ethics package has to be complete, and if it's not, we don't need to start this.
And Senator McConnell wrote to us 7 or 8 years ago admonishing us when the tables were turned and there was a Democratic president named Barack Obama. He was going to hold us to that standard. If nominees wanted to move forward, they had to file the required papers, ethics statements, divestment of their investments that may be a conflict, tax returns were required, FBI check. And we said, you know, you're right. That's exactly what the law says. And that is what President Obama followed. Now we're being told, well, we're going to have to treat this a little differently. Some of these people are so rich and wealthy that it's going to take more time to go through all of their holdings and all their possible conflicts.
All the more reason to do it.
Absolutely. And if there's going to be trust in the process, then we have to know these things. When Penny Pritzker from Chicago sought the office of Secretary of Commerce, she has a lot of wealth and a lot of holdings. It took 6 months to go through everything, to clear everything, and give her chance to serve. She patiently did it because that's what the law requires. We can expect nothing less when it comes to the appointees of President-elect Trump.
The process of going forward, because you have the votes, can you steamroll this thing if you're the Republicans?
Well, they can to some extent. They can push it through committee. They can report them out of committee on partisan roll calls. When it comes to the floor, there are requirements of a certain time for debate, basically 30 hours, sometimes more. We waive those things when everything looks normal and non-controversial. But if Mitch McConnell and the president-elect are going to insist on avoiding the legal requirements, then we've got to take some more time. You know, we have a right to know in the Senate. More importantly, the American people have a right to know.
Yeah, and that's really the key issue. Now, can we also agree going forward that we're going to make an effort to stop screwing around with the Supreme Court? Because, you know, when I was growing up, Senator, it didn't take Schoolhouse Rock to teach me that it was the third equal branch of the government and shouldn't be manhandled by Congress and played around with in a partisan way.
Well, it's a mess, and it's a mess because last year, with the death of Anton Scalia and President Obama following his constitutional mandate to nominate someone to fill the vacancy, something happened that had never happened before in the history of the Senate. Never. Senator McConnell, the Republican leader, said, we're not going to have a hearing on President Obama's nominee, and we're certainly not going to have a vote. In fact, he said, I refuse to even meet with the person. That had never happened. When the tables were turned with President Reagan in his last year in office, he sent the name Anthony Kennedy to the Senate. I believe Joe Biden was the chair of Judiciary. A hearing, a vote, Kennedy to the court in that last lame duck year. No questions asked. And in this case, Mitch McConnell said, I'll wait to see if I can get a Republican president to fill this vacancy. Well, with a big smile, he declared victory on November the 9th. He had his Republican president-elect. The vacancy still existed on the court. Now the question is, what do we do about the nominee to be sent to us from the White House? If it turns out to be a person who is not controversial, who is clearly qualified, moderate in tone and approach, I don't think there's going to be a lot of controversy. Sure, there'll be questions, but it'll go through the normal course. However, if we end up with someone in an extreme position, I mean, look at where we are today. I mean, it really has corrupted the system with what we've been through over the last year.
Yeah, and the bottom line for me is this. It's a process of advice and consent that is constitutionally mandated. It's not up for debate. It's not up for translation by Mitch McConnell. And frankly, it doesn't help when Senator Schumer says something like, maybe we won't approve anybody either, so he needs to control that side. So, because the Democrats have an opportunity to look like the good guys here, and frankly, you guys need it.
Well, I've talked to Chuck about that, and his point was what I tried to make earlier. If this is a mainstream nominee to fill this vacancy, it's going to be a lot easier for Democrats to swallow hard and say, well, you know, we were treated unfairly under President Obama, but for the benefit of this nation, we've got to move forward. So now the burden really falls to the president-elect.
Senator Jeff Sessions is first on the hot seat. Do you anticipate any, pushback? Do you expect his nomination to go through? And who else do you think might be getting more pushback from the confirmation hearings?
Well, I can tell you Senator Sessions' hearing this morning is going to be one that I'll be involved in, and I think we followed very closely. This is the highest legal office in the land when it comes to law enforcement. And Senator Sessions and I came to the Senate the same year. We could give one another speeches. We know one another that well. When he came by my office the other day, thank goodness he didn't try to tell me there's a new Jeff Sessions. He basically said, I am what I am, and I understand that he does too. Some of his positions really trouble me, and I'm going to be asking him about them this morning when he's appearing before this committee. But, you know, he is one of several controversial nominees in terms of their background, their positions. Governor Perry, who wants to abolish the department that he's going to be asked to head. Rex Tillerson to the Secretary of State's position, who has been a very successful international businessman in the oil industry. I mean, Congressman Price, who wants to head up the agency that is dealing with Medicare, who's called for privatizing and basically changing Medicare as we know it. There is some controversy associated with these nominees.
Yeah, and it has to be gone through. It does. Steve Rozanich is in the newsroom. Is Betsy Voss hearing postponed, Steve?
Yes, it has been, apparently. DeVos, the hearing has been postponed until Thursday. According to sources on Capitol Hill, the senator might be able to confirm that it's pushed from Wednesday to Thursday, we're hearing.
Well, it's been pushed back, and I don't know the exact day. She is another one who hasn't filed the appropriate papers and has some outstanding issues, including a $5 million fine in the state of Ohio. So, you know, we have due diligence requirements here. The Republicans use them against Obama nominees. We have to apply the same standard against the Trump nominees. And in this case, a person who has extensive holdings, she married into the Amway family. She was part of the Prince family in Michigan, which is also very wealthy. So, you know, there are a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered about each of these nominees.
Will you make it in for the speech tonight?
Breaks my heart to say no. I sure want to be there. It means the world to me, but I've got a job to do here with Senator Sessions, and I'm going to stay at my post, and I'm going to miss it and regret it.
When you get a chance, if it's appropriate, I hope you'll express to the president my respect for his ability as a father. Because regardless of whatever disagreements there may be about how he's handled the presidency, I think the first family as a family unit leaves the White House after 8 years in pretty remarkable shape. And these girls look like solid citizens. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Steve, 10 years ago, when I sat down in a small room in the Union League Club and said to Senator Barack Obama, you ought to run for president, I wasn't the first, but one of the first to ask him to consider it. The first thing he said was, I'm worried about the girls. What does this mean to them and to my family? I better talk to Michelle. I say, you sure better talk to her. I couldn't agree with you more. Now that I saw them last week, those two young women are outstanding. And to think that they've been raised in the crucible of the White House with all that public attention and turned out to be such good kids, both Michelle and the president can be proud of their kids and all the work they put into making them the fine young women that they are.
I don't know what to say about these hearings. Have fun, break a leg, ask a good question. I don't know. Good luck,
well,
I guess.
We're doing it in the room, which is historic. Iran-Contra hearings, Watergate hearings, Clarence Thomas hearings. I think about that when I walk in that room. If there was a mouse on the wall, you could get a good glimpse of American history just in that one room.
That mouse has had a stroke a long time ago. Too much pressure.
I think that's true.
All the best. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Steve Cochran Show.
62% of Americans, according to CNN's polling, said Hillary Clinton can't tell the truth about anything. And yet...
Who was right
given,
behind her
no,
at that
she
analysis.
Was given the benefit Trump. Of the doubt here constantly.
When?
You can't give him the benefit of the doubt on this, and he's telling you what was in his heart. You always want to go by what's come out of his mouth rather than look at what's in his
it's
heart.
It's a gesture that he's making on video. Everybody can see it. I'm not judging
Why
the man. I'm judging what he did.
The fact that Chuck Schumer said that he will obstruct every single Supreme
because
Court nominee.
Because I
he
don't
even know
draw
who they are yet, Chris.
Equations between
no, it's not
bad
equations.
Acts.
Good for Chris Cuomo. Let me tell you something. I don't live in Donald Trump's house. I don't live in the White House. How in the hell would I know what's in his heart? The only way you could judge the president is by what comes out of his mouth. What an insane statement. Ugh. Two things need to happen. The Secret Service needs to, every time Trump reaches for his phone, they need to slap it out of his hand like it's a threat, because it is. And secondarily, every time Kellyanne Conway agrees to go on a talk show, Secret Service needs to take her into custody. Temporary protective custody.
Yeah.
Ryan Nobles joins us now, one of the best at CNN. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Steve. How are you? Good morning.
I'm glad you were able to hear my fair-minded intro.
No worries.
It's just so frustrating because at a time when the media is being held up as the enemy, the job of the media is to report the facts. The facts don't come from what I presume may be in your heart. What an insane statement.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, you covered the campaign really closely for the last 18 months, and I can tell you that was the most frustrating thing for me was, you know, you report the facts, you report them as you see them, and it was both sides of the aisle, truly, the Clinton campaign and the Trump campaign and their supporters. If they didn't view it the same way that you saw it, all of a sudden became that you had some sort of an agenda. So that's really been the biggest challenge for those of us in this town covering this administration going forward.
The fact that the news channels need these surrogates to fill up 24 hours of news is part and parcel to the problem, right?
I push back on that a little bit. You know, you need all these points of view to be out there, but I think there is a little bit of a responsibility, I think, upon the consumer of this news to understand that when you hear someone who is clearly someone who is representing the organization or the campaign, that they're different than an impartial journalist. So it does make our job a little bit more difficult, but you do need to get all those sides out there throughout the course of the day, especially, as you mentioned, when you're on for 24 hours.
Well, here's the thing, and I salute. I watch a lot of CNN, and I salute CNN for this. Cuomo and Tapper have just about had it. Cuomo and Tapper. You watch Jake Tapper in the afternoon and Cuomo in the morning, and they're just not putting up with it. You know, and Chuck Todd. I give Chuck Todd credit at NBC too. They're all standing up. They're going, look, you cannot go to the easy argument that, oh, there you go again, media, because it's just this cliched out, and you can't allow politicians to do it.
Yeah, and I can tell you, one-on-one, Jake and Chris are no different. They're not going to let you off the hook in an editorial meeting or if you're reporting as well. They want the truth out at every step of the way. And I think both those guys, and Chuck Todd too to a certain extent, you know, they all are looking at this for a long game. You know, there are short-term victories that can be made when you try and discredit someone with one individual story. But when you take a look at the track record of someone like Jake Tapper or Chris Cuomo or Chuck Todd, you can see that these are guys that have called balls and strikes fairly throughout the course of their career, that's what's going to rise to the top ultimately as we get through whatever this next 8 years or 4 years is going to be like. And as long as you keep on the straight and narrow, I think that viewers and people that are truly going to want some sort of a serious look at how this administration is going to conduct itself, that's what they're going to go for, and they're going to want people who are going to ask those tough questions.
I'm glad that Tapper and Todd are kind of laying out this foundation for the media not being a punching bag. But, Ryan, don't you find it a little disheartening? We're 10 days away from Donald Trump being inaugurated, and he's still taking to Twitter to rip Meryl Streep. or Arnold Schwarzenegger, or say there's no ball gowns in Washington, D.C. I don't think it. Do you think anything will change?
That's why the Secret Service has to slap his phone out of his hand.
Listen, you know, when you said that, Steve, coming in, the thing that I think we as journalists need to prepare ourselves for is it's not going to stop. You know, there is no reason to think that once he's inaugurated here in a little more than a week, that all of a sudden the tweets are going to stop and he's going to stop engaging in fights over the ratings of his old TV show or celebrities that criticize him. This is, you know, this is who the American people elected, and this is what you're going to get. So, you know, to kind of answer your question, Andrea, we need to figure out the best way to report these stories fairly, in a way that is responsible to the people who are watching. And, you know, there's a lot of criticism that we breathlessly report every time he tweets. But there's a reason that you have to do that.
It's news.
Right.
He's about to become the president of the United States. And when the president speaks, markets move, wars begin. So even though it's coming through Twitter and even though it's coming through and sometimes grammatically incorrect, language, it's still very important and we can't ignore it.
And here's the thing that the president-elect, and again, this is friendly advice because I want him to win. We need him to win. The friendly advice is this. You got 15 million followers. You have an unbelievable platform to use Twitter for good. You have an unbelievable platform to use Twitter to mold your message. But it needs to be a presidential message, not a 12-year-old's message. And that's the thing that I'll tell you what, if I was the Senate, I would confirm his Twitter censor, his Secretary of Twitter censorship immediately. That's who he needs.
Yeah, but you know, the thing, Steve, is, and I think this is an important point that a lot of people miss, at this point in his political career, there is no reason for Donald Trump to stop doing what he's been doing, because it has been successful from the start to the finish. So I think he needs a loss somewhere along the way. I think that he needs to send out a tweet that is truly damaging to him or his administration before he changes course, because so far everything he has done has been successful. And it's not just the big things, it's been the little things. You know, he tweeted about Carrier and moving those jobs out of Indianapolis, and then some of the jobs were kept in place. You know, his Twitter assaults have been successful for him as a politician. So it's not until he gets some sort of serious pushback or he's hurt in some way that he's going to change course. I mean, why would anybody do that? If you're doing something that works, why wouldn't you keep doing it?
Right, but I just hope he understands the weight of what he's taking on. The first right. time he met with Obama, when he sat there, he looked scared to death, and frankly, he should be. And I hope once he moves in next week, he understands the weight of, literally, the weight of the world is on his shoulders. Right, well,
and that could be the problem, is that his first loss could be something that's really damaging to the country, and that's why a lot of people are concerned.
You know why we like Ryan Nobles? Not just because he's Ryan Nobles and he's a great dad. He's got three great kids and all that. He's another upstate
Almost
New Yorker.
Four, Steve.
Well, you got a fourth on the way? Oh, God bless, man.
Oh, yeah. He's due on Inauguration Day, so what do you think about that?
Well, I think you ought to get a hobby and leave your wife alone for 10 minutes. But as a fellow upstate New Yorker who found his way to the greatest city of the world here, and you're keeping track of the toughest city to cover in the world there, I think we're doing our part.
Yeah, well, we're trying, Steve. Upstate New Yorkers have got to stick together, that's for sure.
All the best. Safe travels, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good one.
Ryan Nobles. You can follow Ryan. He's on CNN News Source. He writes there all the time. And you just Google Ryan Nobles and follow him on social, and we like him. He's a good dude.
You know, he brought up a good point, too. Yes, we do report Twitter and what Donald Trump is
saying. It's news!
It is news, but more so than that, what's great about this country is we need to hold all politicians, Democrats, Republicans, President,
everyone
Senator, everyone accountable.
How's Mike Madigan's Twitter account? That's right, he doesn't even have a phone.
Oh, no. 5-9.
The Blackhawks! Blackhawks Radio. 720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk.
Chicago.
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Hawks on a roll. Hawkopedia time now. Here's your host of Hawkopedia, Dave Innick.
How about a midterm?
Midterm would be good.
Even though the Blackhawks have already passed the halfway mark of their season, they have played two games in the second half of their schedule, 43 down, 39 to go. The overall league schedule passes the halfway mark tonight. Total of 1,230 games are played in the regular season. So far, there have been 611 completed.
I've seen them all.
I know you have. You have that NHL Game Pass. Among the trends at the halfway mark, roughly 300 games, Just about 49% of all games played have been decided by
one goal.
One goal. Nobody has won more one-goal games than
the Blackhawks.
You're right. Of their 26 wins, 16 of them, Steve, have been decided by one goal. That leads the NHL.
I would make the argument that in this modern era of success, that they have never made it easy.
No.
That there's been very few 7-2s, 6-3s, 5-1s. You know, and more often than not, it's 2-1 going into the third, and they come roaring back and get it done.
Yeah, they have the every once in a while they have the explosion.
Yeah,
the other night's 5-2, but that's with two empty net goals in the last 2 minutes.
I maintain. I mean, I love those guys, mm-hmm. and they're our friends and our family, but they're trying to kill me. Back to you, Dan.
I don't think it's intentional. Anyway, the Blackhawks' winning percentage in one goal games 59%. San Jose is next in one goal wins with 13. And somewhere else, the Blackhawks rank very high. Wins when they are outshot by their opponent. Of their 26 wins, 14 have come.
Wow.
When the Blackhawks have fewer shots on goal than the other team. That's second only to the New York Rangers.
That's impressive.
Hawks have won 10 times when they outshoot the other team. Of course, part of that, Steve, outstanding goaltending, which sure. the Blackhawks have enjoyed all season. But a pretty good chance. When they play the Detroit Red Wings tonight at the United Center, the game will come down to one goal. All part of an attempt to kill Steve Cochran.
Nice midterm. Well done by you.
It's our midterm, and that's our Hawkopedia.
And Red Wings suck.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
CLTV at 9. Hope you join us then. You can watch it and go, oh, that's what they look like. Dean Richards is here right now from Channel 9. Good morning.
You could start referring to me as the overrated Dean Richards.
Is that what Trump said? You're overrated?
No. I just like the description.
Meryl Streep said that, I think.
Meryl Streep said Dean was overrated? Wow, that's unfortunate.
No, she loves you, Dean.
She's a very nice woman. I told you she F-bombed me.
Did she really?
Yeah.
No.
To be funny.
What'd she say?
Tell the story, yeah.
I said.
And include the F-bomb. Yeah.
She was in studio, and somebody came in, and they were very nervous to meet her. And there's a staff person here, and I said, and she and I have been talking for a while. And I said, well, turns out she's a complete jerk. And she goes, oh, F you, Steve.
On the air or off the air?
No, well, it's off the air.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, she was very funny. Yeah, she was very nice.
I've told the story
good kisser too.
Many times how she's the only A-lister that when you walk into the room, she gets out of her chair to shake hands with you.
Classy broad.
Classy, good manners.
Yeah.
She's got good manners.
I just thought she's a very nice person. And, you know, I don't say that a lot about people that F-bomb me. Hi, Dean. How are you?
I'm well. Well, thanks for asking. Thanks for your concern about my well-being.
I watched the national championship game, and then I woke up at 1:30 and could not get back to sleep. So I feel like I'm starting to hit the wall right now. So that 9 o'clock CLTV hour ought to be entertaining.
I watched a Beverly Hillbillies marathon that was
on. Oh, did you?
Yesterday.
I got to watch Manchester by the Sea, so thank you both.
Ooh.
Wow, I went to bed depressed.
Yeah, what a laugh,
right? Depressed. Cheery, no.
But it's such a good movie, though.
Fantastic movie.
Isn't it such a good movie?
Oh,
really you watched The Bachelor. It was more entertaining.
No, I promise you it wasn't.
More entertaining than the Hillbillies getting a mansion in England? I don't think so.
Well, I tell you, there was some stuff going on there last night. Mm-hmm.
You know, more entertaining than Granny trying to fix up Jed with the high society woman and the bug tussle?
Oh, the bug tussle ladies, yeah.
Girl took off her bikini in the pool.
So did Granny.
So did Jane Hathaway.
Yikes.
So did Casey Affleck. Oh, wait.
So did Mr. Drysdale.
Wow.
You think you can want to play this reference game with me? I'll go all damn day. You know what? MeTV. You know the MeTV people?
I do.
Yeah. I started watching Hogan's Heroes reruns recently, yep. And I just get caught up in how ridiculous that show is.
A little bit.
You know, it's the old premise, and I don't know who did it first. I think it may have been Richard Klein. But the stand-up premise goes, how do you pitch that show? You walk in, you go, all right, I got a sitcom about a prison camp in Nazi Germany. But and I tell you, that Schultz, what an actor.
He's magnificent. I can't get, when I watch that show, I get too distracted by the way Bob Crane met his end.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
How about the fact that he only had one black leather jacket that he wore for the entire run of the show?
Well, you know, he was a prisoner. They didn't have a lot of wardrobe options.
Yeah, I suppose.
All right, don't spoil it, because I'm going to binge watch Hogan's Heroes next week.
Oh, I bet you meant spoil Bob Crane's ending.
Do they still not know, right, what happened?
Yeah, no, his buddy killed him.
That proved?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they were involved in porn, and Bob Crane apparently wanted out at some point, and the buddy had sort of fallen for him and decided, well, then I'll murder you.
Hmm.
Yeah. By the way, kids, if there's one lesson...
I know nothing.
If there's one lesson out of this segment, that's no way to settle an argument by murdering your friend.
The porn part doesn't bother you at all?
No, I'm fine with that. All right, here's what's coming up. There is a Marlon Brando story, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Wayne Brady in the cast of Hamilton. I don't know if that helps the value of your tickets or hurts them. Debbie Reynolds, the cause of death has been released. Jamie Foxx in an altercation at a Hollywood restaurant. And if you're freaky for the old Twin Peaks show, that freaky show is coming back.
I'm going to listen to a story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food. And up through the ground come the bubbling crew.
That's when a TV show is a TV show, my friend.
Texas Tea.
Well, the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. Some folks said, Jed, move away from there. Said, California is the place you ought to be. So they loaded up the truck and they moved to
Tennessee.
They moved from Tennessee. They left Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Yeah. Don't you heckle me.
Oh. That just makes me smile.
Yeah, why wouldn't it? With your big night that you had.
The early black and white ones. Granny fighting a kangaroo who she thought was a giant jackrabbit.
Oh, sure. Those are good days.
That was a good one.
Yeah, no doubt.
Anytime the doorbell rang and they didn't know what was going on.
Yes. Ding dong. What the hell is that thing? And every time they needed to cipher something, where would they go? Out by the cement pond.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sometimes the fancy eating room.
The fancy eating room.
Because they would eat on the pool table.
That's right.
And use the victuals passers.
Yeah.
The pool cues to pass the victuals around the table.
That granny. That granny was an actor. All right. So what's the Marlon Brando story?
Well, it's just, you know, everyone's talking about this Meryl Streep thing with Donald Trump yesterday. George Clooney got into the fight yesterday also. Saying shouldn't the vice president-elect be working on running the country instead of worrying about that? Scott Baio got into the fight yesterday also, saying that speeches like that is why Donald Trump got elected.
I just want to weigh the acting talent. Scott Baio, Meryl Streep. Scott Baio, Meryl Streep. Oh, it's a tie.
The entertainment community, very important, weighing in on all of this. But it got me thinking about these political speeches.
Yeah.
You know, at award shows. We kind of think of it as commonplace these days. But
oh, yeah.
I was trying to think about when was the first time that it happened, and I actually spent a couple of hours researching it yesterday. And I couldn't find anything any earlier than the 1973 Academy Awards, when Marlon Brando won the Academy Award for Best Actor for The Godfather. Instead of Marlon Brando getting up on the stage, a Native American named Sasheen Littlefeather did and made her little political statement. Take a little listen to this. Let's go back, shall we?
Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Accepting the award for Marlon Brando and The Godfather, Miss Sasheen Littlefeather.
We very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry. Excuse me.
Crowd starts to turn. Crowd gets back with her. With the, this is Sasheen.
And on television.
She's still very involved in the...
And also with
the rights of Native Americans.
I was going to say, she's still alive?
She is still alive.
Okay.
She's like 78 years old now and still working on Native American issues.
Was she a girlfriend? I thought I heard that rumor at one point, too, that she somehow was involved with Brando. No?
I had never, I've never seen that confirmed. I've heard rumors on that.
Could you go ahead and look that up while we hold?
Let me call the family.
Okay.
And ask
whatever happened to the Oscar? She turned it away and they took it back?
She wouldn't take it. The I forget what actor.
Scott Baio. Scott Baio grabbed it.
Yes, right.
Scott Baio. Yeah, Scott Baio got it.
He said, just keep refusing those Oscars and see what happens.
Very young Scott Baio got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wayne Brady joining the cast of Hamilton.
I think this is going to be good.
Listen, he's incredibly talented. He really is. Yeah, that's it. That's the entire statement. He's incredibly talented.
Well, first of all, Joshua Henry, who has been amazing in the role of Aaron Burr in the show, is leaving the show in order to join the national touring company that'll kick off in San Francisco in March. San Francisco, March, they're going to do sort of a West Coast tour of Hamilton. He'll be in that. He's been amazing. Wayne Brady, who we know best from Whose Line Is It Anyway? And these days, Let's Make a Deal, will step into that role January 17th through April the 9th. People are asking, does he have the chops to, you know, it's one thing to do improv comedy. Does he have the chops for something like this?
Oh, he can pull it off.
He very much does. He's a very good singer and starred in Kinky Boots on Broadway for quite a long time. And that's not only singing and dancing, Steve. As you know how difficult it is to do that in drag in high heels.
Yeah, well, that's just my weekend. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even doing the play. That's just how I dress on the weekend. What killed Debbie Reynolds?
Hearing you say that that's what you do on the weekends. death certificate was released yesterday, and the official cause of death was intracerebral hemorrhage. That is a type of stroke.
Yeah.
So what was suspected is actually what happened.
What about Carrie Fisher? Do we know that cause?
Carrie Fisher, the death certificate came out yesterday, and officially the death was accredited to a cardiac arrest, but they're still doing toxicology tests from the results of the autopsy because they want to know what triggered the massive heart attack. That they do not know yet, but the result was a cardiac arrest.
I didn't know Twin Peaks was coming back.
It is. It is going to be.
I never watched it much.
Honestly, I didn't either, but this is one of these shows that if you were a fan of Twin Peaks, you were super, super loyal to the show. I watched a couple of them, and I don't know if this was the same with you. I always just got, this is too weird for me. I don't get whatever.
I was the same way with, what was it, Lost? Was Lost a show?
Lost was a show.
Yeah, with a plane crash that wasn't a plane crash or whatever the hell that turned out to be.
Northern Exposure, I want to say, I thought was similar to that, but anyway,
Golden Girls, all the confusing.
don't get me started on Golden Girls because that's even bigger than Beverly Hillbillies with me.
So, are the original people involved in this Twin Peaks?
If four of us on this show were the Golden Girls, which one would we?
I'd be Blanche. I'd absolutely be Blanche because I like a good time.
I think I want to be Dorothy. Andrea?
Not that this has gotten any weirder. I guess I'll do Sophia.
Okay. All right. Fine. All right.
I mean, I'll be Sophia.
Yeah. And that leaves Dave to be
Betty White.
Rose.
Well, he's the oldest.
Thank you for being
a friend. Look at Jake getting it done, man.
The only reason I picked Dorothy B. Arthur is because her voice was the only one we could ever hear that was deeper than mine.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Twin Peaks is going to be on Showtime.
You go ahead. I'm going to sing.
Sunday.
Invited everyone. 21st.
18 hours.
You would see
of the new
biggest
Twin Peaks
gift would be for me.
On Showtime.
And the card attached would say,
thank you for being a friend.
Should be the theme of this show. Thank you for being a friend.
More to do.
God, if people knew how much money I make to do this,
we need
lives. Ridiculous.
Lives.
I am so overpaid. David Lynch doing this Twin Peaks?
David Lynch is doing this again.
Okay. Sorry. I don't really care. I just thought I'd try to segue out of it.
That sounded very official, like you cared.
And what about Jamie Foxx? What happened to him?
So he is in a restaurant in Hollywood on Saturday night.
Saturday was in a restaurant.
This was Saturday night. He's having dinner with some friends.
Okay.
And some guy comes
up. Sounds like
a
nice night.
It does. A very pleasant evening is what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
He's having dinner with some friends. Mm-hmm. A guy comes up to him and starts hassling him, saying that he doesn't like him.
Was it Trump?
They're talking too loud, that he's overrated.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy takes a swing at Jamie Foxx. Foxx weaves out of the way, but a fight breaks out. This guy that just, you know, walks up to the table and starts swinging at people.
Jamie Foxx can handle himself. Did he deck him?
Well, here's what happened. After he ducks and gets out of the way, Jamie Foxx gets up, puts the guy in a chokehold, and gets him down on the ground.
There you go.
Cops show up. And, you know, the rest is history.
But, that's what I'm talking about.
But when that at this restaurant, I don't know what restaurant it was. I like to hang out here because Nicole Murphy was there. Director Michael Bay was there and saw it. Cuba Gooding Jr. was there. Jerry Bruckheimer. Super high-profile joint in Hollywood.
Sounds like Danny's.
Could be.
Yeah, it could be.
Nothing better than a nice Grand Slam breakfast.
All right, buddy. It's been great doing this.
Entirely too entertaining today.
It's been a delightful segment. We'll sing some more TV themes tomorrow.
You know what this segment was today?
What?
Overrated.
Yes, it was. You know what? You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We play The Who for Coach Q. Coach Q invented something called mustache banging. You know, the head banging where you, the hair is flying. Coach Q actually makes the mustache fly. That's true, isn't it, Coach?
Sure.
Wait, leave me hanging out to dry. I'm just trying to tell people what you do for a good time. Hello?
Yeah, how you doing?
So that's the way it's going to go today, crickets? I thought we were on the same team, you and I.
For sure.
Okay. Coach Key's obviously in the witness protection program. All right, let's talk a little hockey. You want to do that?
Why not?
All right, let's do it. Who we got tonight, Dave Edit?
The Detroit Red Wings at the United Center.
I've heard of them. I still can't get over the fact you only see them twice a year. There's no chance that'll change anytime, I assume.
Well, not now, but the rivalry has been still there. I still think, you know, you got a lot of Detroit fans here, and we seem to have a lot of fans in Detroit. And I still think that every time we play these guys, it's an important game, and it you can feel it in the building. And we know that they always play us well, and it's always a tight game. And, you know, they got a team that, you know, this year is probably not as you know, as far as top guys, you know, you lose Datsyuk, they've lost Lidstrom, they lost that star power, but they still got a team that works hard, and they've got some guys at work, and they've got balance in their lineup, and we expect a hard game.
The Red Wings, they came, they went, they came, they went, but they're always a perennial favorite. I don't know how you keep the rivalry up when you only see them twice a year. Is the tension still there when these guys play each other?
I would say there's a lot of respect for the opposition, and I would think that, you know, now that it's, you know, you're not playing them six times, and you're not likely playing them in the playoffs. And
it's not like Nashville.
You hope,
and
you hope to play them in the playoffs because that's a great sign that you can play them at the end. But we, you know, I just think that everybody still feels the importance of the game, and knowing that everybody likes to see Chicago and Detroit get it together.
You see any decline in Zetterberg's game as he moves up in age?
I think top guys over the years, you know, he still finds a way to be effective in a lot of ways. The puck is always on his stick, and he manages to find people, and he's still useful in a lot of ways. And the guys that that have that type of experience know what they can do to contribute to make themselves effective. And he's a smart player, and they use him, you know, in a lot of different ways. But his puck protection is. And play recognition is high end, and it you know, really compliments his team.
Andrea, say hi to Coach.
Hi, Coach. Jalmerson. How you doing? Good morning to you. Jalmerson scoring his career high fifth goal Sunday in the win over the Predators. Nice write up yesterday. He said it's just luck, but he's playing great hockey.
You know, Hammer's always one of those guys that consistently does his job, and he gets more recognition for what he does defensively. But this year, pucks are going in for him. But he did some nice things on the point on his shot the other day with traffic at the net, but he changed the angle on it. He's been off the point a lot, hanging around the front of the net, in and out from the point. And he sees those plays, and nice to see him have a little bit of finish. But I think Hammer really does bring so much to our team on the defensive side of things. Nice to see him get a little attention for what he's been doing offensively.
I have to ask you how many times you have seen a guy get two empty net goals in less than 2 minutes, let alone get them to complete a hat trick.
I don't know if I've seen it, but I've seen that might have been the ugliest hat trick recorded, knowing he didn't shoot the first one in the net off right. his pant, and then and the other one looked like Pans was going to hit it before it went in the net, and then now he's got two late in the game, and Kaner makes a nice play to him to complete it. So, but happy for Hartsy, and
they actually threw visors on the ice. They didn't give him full hats for that. So, but I tell you, you're in a nice zone here. You're in a nice zone. It's feeling good. We love this role. And I want to ask you a couple things about other players in the game. It's easy for me to hate Ovechkin because I'm a fan, but it's hard to deny the talent. And last night he tied Maurice Rocket Richard. That's a hell of a career.
Well, he's probably as pure goal scorer in today's game that there's been for a while. And his one-timer, and he took a shot there last night that it was one of those shots that you remember, because I haven't even seen it. It's kind of a wrist shot, snapshot, all in one motion that beat him from that same spot. He likes to hang out on a power play, and we got him coming up on Friday. So he's an amazing player, competitive as heck, and hard to play against, and he's got a great weapon with a shot, and certainly, you know, and he likes to score too. So we'll try to be busy trying to stop him on Friday. But certainly, amazing goal scorer and career as well.
Another guy that deserves his due, and a guy that I really loved to hate when he was with Vancouver, is Roberto Luongo. He had another milestone last night. He's now fifth all time in the NHL goalies list for wins.
Yeah. You got to like his consistency, and he's played on on some different teams, and you know, he gives his team a chance to win every single night. Plays the bulk of the games over the course of the year, and finds the way to keep himself healthy and still getting you know, the bulk of the net at his stage of his career, which is you know, it's meaningful, knowing that he doesn't look like he was slowing down. His appetite for the game is still there, and you know, he's still you know, trying to make them good. Got a big win last night in Jersey for his team, and but he's another guy that you look at top guys. You know, they find a way to that consistency of being the best they can be and helping their team and making guys around them better.
Have fun tonight with the Red Wings. Are we fighting? Or are we good? You and me. I'm talking about.
Oh, I think we're fine. Okay. Always been fine.
Okay, good. Okay. I just wondered there in the beginning because, you know, I mean, you know, I could bring Brandmeier back. You didn't want that, did you? Coach, I love you. Have fun tonight. Go get a win.
Thanks.
See you later. That's Joel Quenneville, the head coach of your Chicago Blackhawks.
Got his game face on.
Mm-hmm. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Says we're not fighting. We're fine. He just left me hanging out to dry there.
No, I think he was just, you know what, it was like teasing. Want a tissue? Mm. Like a little playful. I think he's being playful with you.
What was it, tiny violins? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. You look a little sad.
I'm not sad. No, just didn't realize that. Well, you said we're not fighting. I'll leave it at that.
You're fine, yeah.
It's 8:50. Why would it be fighting? I have nothing but love for Coach Q.
And he feels the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Yes, Steve.
You must have done something.
Have you not come out as often, maybe? Have you not come to see him?
I had bronchitis for 2 weeks. I didn't see him.
Yeah, you don't want to come out there then.
Yeah. So.
Oh, this is awkward.
Hey, here's an invitation to join WGN Radio and me in the fight to end lung disease. Sunday, March 5th, it's the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb, presented by United Healthcare at Presidential Towers in the West Loop. It's not only Chicago's biggest stair climb, it is the nation's biggest by a number of steps. You can climb 1, 2, 3, or all 4 towers. That's 180 floors, 2,340 steps. you'll take in the mission to help save lives by improving lung health, and a great way to meet your own personal fitness goals this year, too. Now, the early bird registration is only $15 before January 12th. So now is the perfect time to sign up. And if you can't climb, you can still help with the pledge in support of the WGN radio team. 89 cents of every dollar raised goes directly to education, research, and advocacy. So who's with me, huh? Andrea? Steve?
I will make a nice donation.
I'm totally in. I told you last year I'm in this year. I'm totally in.
You're in. Okay, very good.
You're climbing?
I'll do it twice.
You're climbing all those steps.
So you'll do. Coach Kuhn and I are going to climb arm in arm.
Oh, perfect.
I'll write you a nice big fat check, Dave.
Oh, okay. Well, don't make it to me, but register or pledge online.
You want to hear my impression of me asking Coach Kuhn if he was going to climb with me?
Yeah.
Coach, you want to do the stair climb with Dave? Sure. Why not?
They might have a game that day, but fightforairclimb.org or call 312-781-1100.
It is, what time? 8:56. And CLTV will join us here in just a couple of minutes. Next hour on the program, Esteban Santiago is this lunatic who shot up the Fort Lauderdale airport last week and changed the lives of, 14 families, 13 families. And at last word, there were 25,000 items that were left behind that had to be claimed in the airport when people ran for their lives. We got a guest on next hour, best-selling author of Crisis of Character. He's a former federal air marshal who can talk a little bit about airport security and if any changes are warranted. Plus, did we track down Pat Brady? Is Pat Brady somewhere on the road going to join us next hour? Are we still working on that? Pat Brady, to address whether or not there will ever be a budget for this state. There was talk there may be one yesterday, and then it blew up. The Wintrust Community Banks Hour continues. We get the CLTV folks to join us next, and we'll do the news in a minute on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Indications are that he came here to carry out this horrific attack.
Under the current guidelines, there's very little the FBI can do from a counterterrorism perspective when presented with somebody with obvious mental health issues.
What I understand, the gun was taken away from him, but it is given back after he was cleared.
Clearly, our current approach to preventing these types of attacks isn't working. How many people have to die?
I support the Second Amendment, and I'm not saying taking guns away from American citizens. I'm saying take guns away from people who might be preconceived to have mental health issues, and look around the world and look what happens.
On Friday, Esteban Santiago shot up the Fort Lauderdale airport. How do we stop people who are mentally ill? How do you stop a lone wolf in an airport? You change the security perimeters? At what point? Where do you stop? You're going to have metal detectors when you leave your house? Gary Byrne is a former federal air marshal, protected the first family when the Clintons were in the White House. He's seen every possible security scenario, and he can speak to this, and he joins us now on the phone, and you see him as a regular on all sorts of Fox shows in particular. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Doing fine. Thanks for the service that you've done through the years to protect the rest of us.
Thank you. I appreciate being on.
All right. So when it comes to somebody like Santiago, who's clearly deranged, he has the legal right to check a gun. He does something that, frankly, I don't know that we've ever seen before. He gets his bag, goes into the restroom, opens his bag, takes a gun, and just starts shooting people. I don't know how you stop that.
Well, I don't know. Well, here's what I see. We could help improve the situation. You know, when you go to any airport, we'll use O'Hare or Midway.
Yeah.
You know, they're right by you. What do you see when you show up to get on your flight? You see lots of security.
Yep.
When you go to get your bags, you don't see as much, do you?
Nope.
Yeah, so... So on the baggage side, the arrival side, we need to improve security a little bit. I don't mean we need to beef it up with metal detectors. We need to have a couple police officers, whether they're plainclothes, a couple uniformed police officers. Quite frankly, if there had been a uniformed police officer, a few of them, in the Florida airport, maybe this guy wouldn't have been so brazen.
So in other words, atmospheric, right? A show of force is a pretty important thing.
Sure. We keep beefing up the departure side where we get on the plane, but we're ignoring the other side of the airport. So you beef it up a little bit with plain clothes or uniformed police officers, possibly air marshals in plain clothes, and you use the method that we use of screening people when they come in. It's called behavior detection. And police officers use it all the time. You use it when you pull somebody over. It's the way, it's not profiling. It's behavior detection. It's learning certain cues from people's actions. And you might have seen this with this guy. And the truth of the matter is we can't solve all the problems. I know that sounds heinous to say because five people are dead and at least three are injured gravely. But, you know, it's just like we can't stop all car accidents.
Right.
Gary, do you think we'll see noticeable changes? I know you said not metal detectors, but other restrictions, say, for people going into the baggage claim area or even coming out?
Well, to be honest with you, that's an excellent question. But to be honest with you, the system they have is actually really good. And I'll explain to you how it works. So I'm going to come to Illinois to rural, you know, outside of Chicago to go hunt deer. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I take my deer rifle, I put it in the locking case, and I make sure it's unloaded. I get to the airport. I get the paperwork. I show it to them. I show them the gun. They see it's unloaded. I'm allowed to have a box of ammunition in there with it. They lock it up, unload it. It goes to TSA. It gets screened like the rest of the bags, and then it goes on the airplane. When I land, I pick it up, and I go do my hunting. What this guy did was, you know, was heinous. Some of the other things that you don't see generally when, because you don't move guns, I assume you don't, you know, is that, you know, the bag is tagged. So let's say, you know, when you go into a carousel to pick up a bag and you might see a bag laying by itself, any bag that has a firearm on it has a special tag, and all the handlers know what it looks like. As soon as they see nobody's paying attention to the bag, they pick it up and they go and they take it into an office. Because I've actually done this myself, traveling, you know, as a civilian, as a hunter. And when I went to pick the rifle up, it wasn't there. I would go to the office, and the guy says, oh, I saw the tag, I grabbed it. Here you go. No problem. Their system works pretty good. This guy decided to take a very good, you know, system and create a murder around it. And it's just one of those things. I'm not sure we can stop all of them.
I was not aware of that system that you just mentioned. Could we make it legally mandated where gun-checked bags have to be picked up person-to-person? In other words, baggage security would take those bags off separately, and then you'd have to go into the office to grab it?
Yeah, you could, but and in some cases they do it just on their own, but that's not going to change anything because this guy, I mean, in this scenario, unless you're going to evaluate, you know, the person that's picking it up, this guy would have just come in and taken the bag out of the office, you know, I'm assuming, and walked into the bathroom and done the same thing. I get what you're saying, but that's not necessarily...
I'm just wondering if that extra layer of human-to-human contact would have, you know, stopped them. But again, you know, we're trying to parse crazy here.
Right, no, exactly. And you know, one of the reasons you had me on here, and thank you, is because of my expertise. And basically what I see is if you add a layer of security there as far as plain clothes or uniform, you can never go wrong. Because it's a deterrence. And these are cops, you know, you just can't be standing around looking at the paper and playing on your cell phone. You got to be ready to engage and use this behavior detection that the TSA uses on the other side of the airport. Behavior detection is a great system.
Gary, will this incident kind of reclassify who's on the no-fly list? And I'm also curious, is buying a one-way ticket a red flag?
You know, we think of it as a red flag today because of what we saw in 9/11. But, yeah, it is a red flag. To answer your question, it is. But it can easily, you know, it can easily be dispelled. They're a resident of that state. Was it a red flag in this case? It is in hindsight, absolutely.
One last question before we let you go. I think there's an unfair burden on security, and it goes to what we all believe to be common sense. And it's not unrealistic for people to feel this way. This guy went into the FBI offices, said the CIA was trying to get him to join Al-Qaeda. He was clearly deranged. They took his gun at that point, or he turned it in, one or the other. They cleared him after they could question and hold him for a period of time. He came back, asked for his gun. The security folks there were legally obligated to give his gun back. It's not up to the FBI and the CIA to break gun laws as they're written, even if they see a mental health threat in front of them. And I don't know that people understand that.
Well, here's the thing. When he showed up at the FBI office, he had a child with him, his daughter. And the FBI actually, they did a good job with it. So as they're interviewing him, and they realize there's an issue, they contact the local Anchorage police, and they go to his car because he told them the gun's in the car. They get the gun out, so they remove the gun. After interviewing them, they convince them to get mental health. The FBI takes control of the child for a short period of time until the girlfriend shows up and takes the child, the mother of the child. So I think they handled that part very well. So then he goes in and gets medical treatment. And, you know, we have to look at, in some cases, we need to look at mental illness like
no
a broken
doubt.
Life. His mental illness was evaluated, and after a short period of time, they deemed him sane. And he gets his constitutional rights back. He gets to carry a gun if he wants, and he also gets freedom of movement. And he took those two constitutional rights. He flew to Florida, and he committed a heinous crime. You know, we can't. It's just like, you know, when you get into a car 100 times a year, and that one time there's a car accident. You can't always protect yourself from everything.
But I would assume all of you at the highest level of security and protection in this country would appreciate better protection by way of laws being written where you see something where you know there could be a pothole here coming up. So why can't we have better laws to handle it? We need better mental health laws in regards to access to firearms. And I'm not saying it's easy to write them, but if we're not taking it seriously, we're not doing our job.
Yeah, one thing I would say is, as far as laws, is we need to enforce the ones we have now. And when it comes to mental illness, we have to recognize that mental illness, you know, it's not taboo. It's not something to be embarrassed about. Somebody has issues, it is what it is. It's like having a problem with your spine.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, the weird thing is this guy should get credit for coming in and asking for help in the beginning, and then to go off the deep end the way he did. That's just awful. It's an awful, awful story.
I agree.
So where can people stay in touch with you? Are you writing blogs and things, and you got a website you want to mention?
I have a website. I have a YouTube site, Gary Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. I'm also at author Gary Byrne on Twitter. And you can Google my name and still buy my book, Crisis of Character. And I'm actually working on a second book.
Excellent. Good for you. And by the way, the last time you fell asleep on a plane and I stole your peanuts, I apologize.
That's fine. Yeah, if you stole me asleep on a plane, get the AED. I'm dead.
All the best, man. Thank you. 9:21. Back after this. We'll do a quick check-in with Pat Brady from the road. Ask him what's going on in Springfield. Oh, boy. On 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
What would you do if you were stuck in one place and every day was exactly the same?
News stories yesterday said maybe, maybe, maybe the senators got together. Maybe Redonio got together with, what's his name?
Sonny and Cher. I got you, babe.
No, what's his name? The Four Tops. You got your Redonio, you got your Durkin.
Oh, Cullerton.
Cullerton.
Yeah.
Did I mention I got up at 1:30?
You were talking about the song.
Woke up at 1:30, I couldn't go back to sleep. Cullerton Redonio may have gotten together, and maybe they could push something through the Senate. Sure, it would be ugly. And frankly, the Republican members freaked out. And he said, no tax increase. No. I hate to break it to you. You're not going to get a budget without a tax increase and reform.
There will be a property tax increase if this is approved, but reportedly a property tax freeze for 2 years.
So sick of it. Pat Brady's on the road. I'm interrupting a ski trip for he and his daughter, Kelly, and I appreciate the fact that he takes this call. Normally, you just hang up on me. How are you?
I'm great. My daughter, Kelly, was talking a little smack that I'm getting old and I can't get down the hill very fast. I'm a teacher's boss today.
Ah, look at that. I like that. Well, have fun and break a hip.
Yes, thank you.
What did you hear from the road as to why this thing, if there was a thing, fell apart?
Like you just said, people freaked out. And a lot of the Senate Republicans that have been in the minority for a long time haven't taken a tough vote. And this is going to be a time when everybody on both sides of the aisle is going to have to take a tough vote if we want to get something done. And there's going to be a tax increase in some form. I don't like it, but we got to do it. And there's got to be reforms, too. And the Democrats don't like it, but it's got to be done.
Why do we have Republicans standing up and saying, no, 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 no chance? It's not fair. Of course it's not fair. It's not fair to people that they have to take on a tax increase. There's no other way to do it.
Well, it depends on what the tax increase looks like. You could make a good argument on the income tax increase. It's not fair that maybe it should be a service tax. But the reality is, if we get some reforms, that's called the compromise. Everybody's mad. It's probably a good deal.
Right. And that's the only way to possibly get this done. You know, this hurts my heart to say this. Can I not blame Madigan for this?
No, this is what will happen. The Senate, and give Senator Cullerton and Senator Rodonio a lot of credit.
Yeah, they're trying.
Yeah, they're trying, and they put a grand bargain together. But what might happen here is they're going to roll this out, and then we're going to see Speaker Madigan put a poison pill and kill it, because his only motivation is political, and that's not to give Rauner any victory. So if Rauner gets a budget down, that's a victory for him, and Madigan doesn't want that. So we'll see how it rolls out. But his caucus is very angry, and so he has to keep them together. But that's how this could roll out. But I'm hopeful today we're going to get something done.
When is the vote for Speaker that, you know, he's up for the speakership again? When is that, to see if Dudley Durong gets in again?
I think it's tomorrow.
Okay. So there's still an opportunity for you to tell your elected reps, support Madigan, you don't get my support, and I hope you will.
You know, there are a lot of great Democrats in the House that I can't understand why they want to be under his thumb. And it's maybe somebody will stand up and take him on, but it doesn't look like it today.
Even if he does become Speaker, there are ways to control him, and the ways to control him is to erode his base of minions who do whatever he says whenever he says it. So that's why I continue to ask you to literally threaten the political futures of those you've elected if they choose to continue to support Madigan.
Crisis is an understatement, too, right now. We are at the end right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to even try to continue this. I know you got to go skiing. I just wanted to get an update from you to see if I'd missed anything. But if you're a Republican senator in Springfield, let's grow up seems to be the word of the week. Let's grow up and explain to your constituents why you don't like it. They don't deserve it. But, yeah, we're going to find a way to make this work, and taxes are going to have to be part of it.
I agree. Everybody knows what needs to be done. It's got to do it.
All right. See you out of Kelly.
All right. Thanks. See you.
See you later.
He's going to school her. I don't know.
Normally, Pat Brady wants to be on the show. He couldn't wait to get off the show and try to go school his daughter.
He wants to hit the slopes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a good dude.
He's a great guy.
And he's a great dad, by the way. 9:29. Let's come back, get the big story coming up. Steve Alexander. We haven't talked to Steve in a long time. He'll join us live in studio coming up as well. Check in with him on his buddy Joe Madden, maybe, as well. See how they're doing. All on the way on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Your money on WGN, Steve Alexander.
In for a big O, in for big O, in for big O.
Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Yeehaw! Well, it's Tuesdays. We talked to Orion Samuelson. Steve Alexander sitting in for big O. We haven't had a chance to catch up with Steve in a long time. See if he needs bail or anything.
Bail?
Yeah.
Why would I need bail?
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
How are you?
Nice to be here.
What's new?
Which camera am I on?
All of them. Yeah.
This is my close-up camera.
Yeah. Mr. DeMille! How are you? Everything good?
Very well. How about you? Yeah. Happy New Year to you.
And to you as well.
Thank you.
As a fellow grandfather, I spent yesterday with Abigail Grace.
She like you?
Yeah, it went really. It was a great, great, great afternoon.
Good.
Yeah, we had like 5 hours together.
She made
some crank calls, knocked on the neighbor's door, ran back inside,
changed a few diapers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, she waits long enough, she might be able to do mine.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, we're in a baseball off season. I don't know if people are aware of your other life, where you're an agent, and one of the guys you deal with all the time is Joe Madden. Mm-hmm. What's he up to?
Joe came to town yesterday.
Okay.
Went to Jewel and went shopping for his yearly event called Thanksmas. When he was in Tampa managing the Rays, he noticed that there were big feeds on Thanksgiving and on Christmas for the needy, but nothing in between. So he thought, well, let's put on one in between and call it Thanksmas.
That's a good idea.
So he has continued that up here, although we're past Christmas, obviously. So Thanksmas doesn't quite apply, but he went shopping at Jewel yesterday along with his wife Jay and collected all of the ingredients necessary to today cook a big Italian themed dinner, which will then be served to needy families tomorrow at the Salvation Army.
How great is that?
Yeah. So that's what he's doing.
It seems like an obvious answer to the question I was about to ask, but since you know him well, what do you know about him that fans don't know?
What do I know about him?
Well, I mean, this stuff that you want to say. I mean, you know, we kind of have this impression that, you know, he's a free spirit. He's got a little old hippie in him, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But what are we missing?
What are you missing? He's
a good guy,
of
obviously.
Muscle cars. He loves muscle cars.
Really?
70s muscle cars. Yeah, 60s, 70 muscle cars. He likes to have dark chocolate every day.
Well, of course, because the flavonoids are good for you.
Let's see.
Did he sell his blue Jeep?
Well, it was raffled off.
That's right.
For a charity. Yeah.
Who ended up winning it? Do you remember?
A fellow named Chris Casson won it, and we raised about $150,000 for that. And
how great is that?
All cleared a charity because the Jeep was donated by Fields.
I got to say, that's full retail on a Jeep, $150,000.
Particular one retailed at about $70,000.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Was his sense? I mean, obviously the relief and the joy of winning the World Series, but is he a guy that will kick back and has kicked back and enjoyed it, or is he nitpicking decisions and things?
No. He's not a second guesser. He just goes with the flow, and he's obviously happy the way it turned out.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just kept on going.
Yeah. How does he handle those who second guess him?
He has them eliminated.
Save a short memory.
No, he's happy to talk to anybody about it. Mm-hmm. He's answered many reporters' questions about you know the seventh game and the handling of Chapman and that. But he doesn't back down from any of it. He's happy to tell everybody what he was thinking and why it happened. And you know, from my perspective, I'm glad they won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Big time.
Now, do you end up spending any time in spring training?
Go down for a little bit. Not much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess they need you to throw.
I'm always there, like you.
Yeah, 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 without a doubt.
With the Hawks, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about you and the Big O. The Big O, as you know, I give him a hard time all the time because this new schedule of his that he went on about a year ago was to slow down.
Yeah.
Can you explain to people what he does? I mean, the guy's doing more speeches and things than ever, isn't he?
He is. The slowing down piece, all that did was cut his
early hour.
Early hour. Yeah. Instead of getting up at 2:15 or whatever it was, he's still getting up about, 6 or whatever. But he travels all over the place. He's always speaking somewhere. That hasn't slowed down at all. He's amazing. 82.
Ridiculous.
82 next month.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. And speaking of really old guys, how's Lyle?
Lyle Dean, the skipper. He is not a skipper anymore. He sold the yacht. Lyle Dean is no more.
And did he buy an RV?
Bought a big old 45-foot motorhome. He's a land yacht. The land yacht, Lyle Dean.
So he and his wife are traveling all over?
Yeah, yeah.
Lyle is one of my favorite guys, even though he'd never admit it. He likes me too. And it's great to hear he's having fun. Yeah, it's great to hear he's having fun.
He's having a good time.
He's the best. The last time I saw Lyle, it was before he sold the boat, and I bike along the lakefront. So I went around the bend by 12th Street Beach there, which is kind of this little cove by the planetarium. Who do I see sitting on one of the benches out there eating fish tacos? Lyle.
Really? Just sitting out there having a fish taco?
Yeah, enjoying his retirement. Yeah. He's the best.
Yeah, how great
is that? He's another one, though. You say retire, and he's constantly sending stories and health updates. And yeah, he's the best.
Anything you need from us at this point, Steve, to help facilitate your day?
Oh, I didn't expect that question.
Yeah, because we've been asking you questions. I thought maybe a question for us.
Dave, are you okay?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Steve.
You seem to be working a lot. Well, not so much anymore now. Football's over, but are you okay? It seems like...
Well, he's in the throes of basketball.
Well, I know. He was doing both there for a while. I was concerned about him.
No, I appreciate that. No, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm doing fine.
Okay.
Okay. Good.
Andrea?
Andrea, are you okay?
I'm good. I'm really well, yeah. Thank you.
I have a lot of issues, but we're out of time.
Steve? It's 10 minutes left.
It's 9:48.
Give Abigail Grace a nice little hug for
you. Yeah, how many do you have now?
Five.
Five.
Oh, wait. One, two, three. Yeah.
And which one's your favorite? Depends on the day.
Don't say it.
What?
Yeah. Better not.
By the way, do you know Mary Vandeveld's going to join the club?
Yeah, I'm good too. Thanks for asking.
You're joining the club?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Her son and daughter-in-law are having a baby when?
June 1st, around there. Yeah. I'm trying to come up with a good name.
Steve or Steven are good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, she means for her, right?
Like a name for me.
Jima.
Yeah.
Oh.
How about Mima? Mima seems to be pretty popular
Mima.
Now.
I'm going with Glamma.
Glamma?
Glamma.
Yeah.
Oh, like glam. Yeah, like that's glam. Nice.
Yeah, there you go.
I like that.
I think it'll turn like out it. To be whatever your grandchild calls it.
Whatever they call it.
Whatever they can spit out.
What are your grandkids
call it? Diane is Noni. Mm-hmm. Right now.
Noni.
Mm-hmm. That's cute.
Kind of morphing into Nana, Grandma, something like that.
Yeah, I used to say Nana.
And I'm Papa.
Yeah, Papa.
Papa.
Yeah. Well,
easy
to
say.
As a black entertainer, Ross has always referred to me as Pops. So
yeah.
I'm looking for G-Pops, but I'm not sure that I'll get that, but that's where we're headed.
You'll answer to anything that little girl calls
whatever
you,
she wants,
you know?
Whenever she wants it. Steve Alexander, available for birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. Call me.
I am. Thank you.
There you go. 9:49, back after this, 7:20 WGN. In a world that's clearly gone nuts, here's a story I meant to get to yesterday. Cold Michigan morning last week, Nick Taylor drove to his girlfriend's house to pick up her 2-year-old son. Like many residents in the middle of winter, he left the car unlocked and running in the driveway, hoping it would warm up by the time he returned. When the 24-year-old walked out to his frosted car, there was a piece of paper tucked underneath the windshield. He got a $128 ticket for leaving his car running in his girlfriend's driveway.
Can you believe that?
What's illegal here, isn't it? In Chicago?
Is it illegal to leave it?
I think it's called puffing. It's you're not supposed to leave your car out there warming up. Isn't it here that it's illegal?
Unless it's on your own driveway or
no,
just
anywhere.
Is it an environmental thing?
I don't know why, but it just maybe another reason to get some money out of you. But
what about taking my naps?
if you're in the car.
You better be cracking a window.
How about Mary wakes up and there's 17 tickets on the windshield?
Because I was laying on the seat and no one saw me.
Taylor told CBS Detroit I was there for maybe 7 or 8 minutes before I noticed the ticket, adding that he was dropping off diapers in the process. Afterward, Taylor posted a photo of the ticket on his Facebook page and blasted the city of Roseville, Michigan for wasting taxpayers' money. The image was shared by about 15,000 people and more since it went down. I thought you couldn't be ticketed on private property, somebody said. Unreal, said another. Despite the dozens of questions raised about the ticket, local law enforcement said they're standing by it. I encourage our officers to write this ticket, said the local police chief. It's out of safety, citing car theft as a public safety concern. In other words, if you leave the car running, you're encouraging car theft, and then we've got to go catch the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Steve Alexander.
Who could commit a crime in the process?
Now, remote start. If you do use a remote start and your car is locked, I guess it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, but 9 U.S. states have laws on the books, including Illinois, where you can get a $500 ticket for idling. Puffing. He's right.
I leave my car running from literally from December until April. My car is running.
So if you see an ice blue Chevy Impala running, it's probably yours. $500.
This is a dumb law.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a dumb law.
It's only $100 in Colorado.
When I pick up Patrick, my stepson, from school, now kids don't just like come out and run to the car. You get in line and each kid gets walked out to each car. It's really involved. But they have these signs that every few feet, turn off your car. Better for the environment. It's green. Very cutesy signs, but it's all about you can't just be sitting there waiting with your car running. You have to turn it off. And the little crosswalk women are like, you know, give you that look, like turn it off. But I have a remote start, and I start it when I'm in the grocery store. But I consider that warming up the car, not idling the car.
I did it at Jewel the other day. You know, when it was 47 below, I got out of the car. I walked 14 feet. I started the car. I was inside for 9 minutes. I knew it was going to kick off. I went to the window of the Jewel. I restarted it and then finished shopping and came back out toasty.
Yeah, I kind of am doing that too.
Lawbreaker.
So, yeah.
These are kind of first world problems.
Who do I send my ticket money to?
Right. Yeah.
$500. And the states that where they have this, Colorado, Illinois, Minnesota, Ohio, Wisconsin. I mean, arguably the coldest state.
So if your car is locked, it's okay?
No, you can't have it locked or unlocked.
It's the car on.
So you can't have the car on.
So you can't do remote start at all.
It's a total revenue suck. It's absolutely a revenue suck.
Cash cow.
That's crazy.
Who's going to pull into your driveway?
Because if you had it in Arizona or Florida, then maybe you don't want people leaving their car idling there, right?
Right. The only warm state is Texas, West Virginia, South Carolina.
What Hubbard Woods, they're pitching it as it's bad for the environment. That's their angle.
Yeah.
You're still going to do it. You're still going to do
in
it.
In the words of Coach Q. Okay.
Let's mark, like, in 6 years when he's picking Abigail up from school and it says turn off your, he's going to be in line and turning his car off because he doesn't want her to feel embarrassed when her grandma's
getting yelled at. Yeah, I mean, if she wants me to, it's fine. Yeah,
when
totally
you
fine.
Said when you said wait in the line, your face kind of went, what?
Oh, yeah. No, he'll be in line. He'll be in line just like my parents get in line to pick up Patrick and they don't understand why, but they're doing it because they love him, I guess.
Yeah, I'll do whatever for her. The rest of you, forget about it. I'm encouraging you to listen to Roe Khan this afternoon, not just because it's a fine radio show, but also because I'm looking forward to Roe asking Tom Skilling about his plane ride with Scottie Pippen.
What?
If you look at social media, Roe Khan is Roe Khan. Scottie Pippen and Tom Skilling are sitting together in first class. They happen to be flying to the same destination, whatever it was. And how much would you like to hear that conversation?
But probably.
Gosh, Scotty, you sure had a terrific shot. Do you ever get out there and play anymore?
Probably Tom won't be on with Roe because he's off on vacation with Scotty.
Oh, I'd call him. Yeah, that's true.
Scotty should be on with Roe.
Together?
Yeah.
Playing
apparently.
The role of Tom. Since
you know, maybe
now.
Maybe Coach Q and I could double with Tom and Scotty.
Yeah.
It's the biggest laugh you got out of you today.
9:57 back with Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.